Hey guys, welcome back to Keeping It 99, the most edifying podcast in the world, and welcome to season 3 of the podcast. Before today's episode, I have a special message and an opportunity for all of you guys to make a difference in someone's life. Recently, I have a mutual friend of mine whose mother passed away, and they have been living from house to house and haven't really been able to find a place to live. They also don't have a car. So it'd be great if you guys could pitch in a little bit to help this person get back on their feet so that they can get a car and start building their life back up again. The link to the GoFundMe is in the description. Please feel free to donate, and any donation is appreciated. Thank you guys very much, and enjoy the episode. One action. Hey guys, welcome back to Keeping It 99, the most edifying podcast in the world. And I'm joined here today with Sophia Iskander. Thank you, Sophia, for coming on to the podcast.
Pleasure being here.
So we're talking today about healthcare and faith and the intersection between the two. So my first question for you is, what got you interested into the healthcare field?
So I originally decided, you know, in high school, you're going through your majors and you're deciding what you want to do with your life and what you want to do with your career. So I had decided at first I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be an OBGYN, which is a woman's doctor, a doctor that delivers babies. The more I looked into it and the more I realized, I don't think I want to be a doctor. I don't want to do med school, first of all. I know I can do it. It's just I don't think I want to do it for that long, for 4 years, and the stress of it and the constant back and forth of, are you going to get in? Are you going to get accepted in med school and then the MCAT? And then I looked at the doctor's lifestyle. He's only in there with the patients for about 5 minutes, doing a quick checkup, asking about their symptoms, and then he's walking out to the next patient. And then he's going to his office, he's getting calls all day, he's getting questions about from the nurses, about prescriptions and all these things. And then he goes home with homework. Honestly, personally, I didn't want to do all that and then have to go home with homework at the end of my 8 years of studying and still have homework at the end of the day. And then I looked more of the aspect, I wanted more patient interaction. So I looked into nursing, and the more I looked into it, the more I researched it, the more I asked around, the more I loved the field, and the more I realized I wanted a career full of service and my life to be all about service. Growing up, that was something I grew up in. I grew up in the khidma. I grew up with my parents serving in Sunday school, serving in kids camp or in vocational Bible school in Nadi during the summer, whatever it was. I was always in khidma all my life. So it became a part of me, and I realized that I didn't just want that at church. I wanted that for the rest of my life. So the more I looked into it, the more I realized it was very fulfilling and a service-filled career. It came with its hards, its ups and downs, and its studies, and of course, but I realized that this was, I felt like it was for me, and this was where God wanted me. So, yeah.
So nursing is your choice. I always find it interesting with people who are in the medical field, especially here in Nashville. I feel like everyone is in the medical field. and I've always found it interesting how people make their decisions and certain things that they see that are important. So for you, it's service and the patient interactions. So I kind of wanted to ask to further that discussion. What about the service and serving others leads you to wanting to have more time with patients, for example?
So when I was doing my rotations in church for service for Sunday school, they did an interview with us at the end of our rotations, and they asked us, why do you want to be a servant? What is it about? What's service? What is service to you? And I sat there and I thought, I thought of when I was serving the kids in Sunday school, even if I enjoyed the grade or if I was having a bad day, I always came out and I felt God there. And the more I did it, the more I saw God, the more I learned, the more he was interacting with me and talking to me, even if it was just a Sunday school lesson for middle school kids or elementary kids, I benefited from it as a 20-year-old, a kid in college or whatever it may be. The lessons that the kids are getting are still benefiting me at an older age. So the more I saw that, the more I wanted that. And I decided to, before going into nursing school, I wanted to get a job in the hospital. I wanted to prepare myself, see what the field looked like, what my everyday was going to look like for the rest of my life. So when I did that, it opened up my eyes so much. It taught me patience. It taught me thankfulness. We always talk about in the church being thankful, but we really don't understand what that's like. Like when kids say, I'm thankful that I can walk. It's different from when you see a patient who truly can't walk, who's paralyzed, who's coming out of spine surgery, and it's painful to just move or to just stand up. It's painful, and they're screaming and they're crying in pain. Just being thankful that you can walk, that your nerves work, Yanni, it's a whole new perspective, and you come out a completely different person in the end. So when doing that, I saw God talk to me every day through work, through khidma, through school, whatever it may be. I saw him there and I felt his presence. So, and he was learning me, he was teaching me something. Every time I went in, he was teaching me something new. So, yeah.
I really like that. And I think, like you said, a lot of times we don't appreciate the things we have until we see someone or ourselves in a situation where we lack that certain thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the beautiful things about medicine is that you have a day-to-day visual of that in front of your eyes every single day.
Yeah.
And that comes with its challenges as well. So I wanted to ask maybe more specifically into your life, like looking into the healthcare industry, were there any things from your youth, because you talked about how you always wanted to be a doctor, what things from your youth kind of pushed you towards that decision into healthcare?
Yeah, so from a very young age, I was exposed to the hospital, the field, from a very young age, from healthcare and all of these things. My dad, when I was younger, he suffered for 4 years due to liver failure. So he was constantly in and out of hospitals, attached to wires, attached to IVs, constantly taking medication. So I saw a lot of that growing up, and I got used to seeing it. Even until now, going into the Vanderbilt Hospital, I remember the hallways because of how much we were there. Every day we were there, pretty much. One day he was there, and he was getting checked out, and he was all right, we're all good. And then the next day he would be, all right, hi, Mr. Skander, how are you doing? So I was exposed to that field very early, and I saw all of these things. So a part of it was my dad, was him being in the hospital, him being seeing him sick a lot. It affects you for the rest of your life. So it made me want to care for sick people, seeing him sick all the time, seeing him. I remember him being in an ICU a while back, like right before he passed away. And he was attached to all of these wires, and he was like, there was so much going on. I was just afraid to come near him because I was like, what if I step on a wire and it like disattaches and he dies or something? So, but I just remember the nurse coming in and being attentive to him and helping him and caring for him, and all the nurses, even asking my mom about the nurses that cared for him during the time. And like there were nurses that were there, and they were the most supportive and made the process even more helpful to it. There, of course, were some that like weren't the best, but being exposed to that at a very young age, I saw that I wanted to go into something where I could care for people. I'd always wanted to care for others. I'm actually the only one in my family who's medical. Everybody else is something else completely different. And then once I got into high school and all that and took anatomy, I was like, wow, I love this. I love learning. It's not just the field itself, but studying is and exams are not always my favorite thing, but when I love what I'm studying, it makes it even better.
So. Yeah, of course. And I like a point you touched on where you said, like, you saw that the nurses care for people, and you knew that what you wanted to do with your life was be put in a position where you can continuously care for people. And I think, like, honestly, that is like a mirror of like Christ's image.
Yes.
You know, so to kind of broaden that discussion, I wanted to ask more about your thoughts on what are the intersections between faith, Christianity, and the healthcare industry.
So when you say that, the first thing that comes to mind is there is this physician. He's a neonatal specialist. I believe my sophomore year, he's a Lipscomb alum, and he came to give a talk about his research and his findings and all of these things. So we were sitting down with him, me and a couple of students, and having a Q&A session with him, and someone asked him, why'd you become a doctor? And his wife was also a nurse. So when he answered, he paused for a second and he almost started tearing up. And his answer was so beautiful. He said that Christ is the great physician. He's known to be the great physician. God has done so much for me in my life, whether it be small or big. And all I want to do is be like him as the physician. Even though I can never measure up to it, I want to pay back my debt to him in some way by serving his children. And right then and there, I felt like that defined for me healthcare and why I wanted to do what I want to do. Seeing, being there and being a light or being a representative of Christ could lead someone to Christianity or to God. A lot of the times people like to differentiate, like, or separate Christianity and faith and religion from the healthcare field. This is that and this is here. Actually, I think it coexists perfectly, because how can you go into the field, how can you study this and not see God and his greatness, his holiness? Like, how can you not see him in this? Like, simply studying the body, you have no idea how fragile we are. Like, the smallest inconvenience could practically kill us and drop us. Like, we could be dead, like drop dead like flies. And like, just for everything to coexist and work perfectly in our bodies, there has to be a really detailed creator to have to do that. Like, you have to be crazy smart. Like, there are things that we still don't understand. After years and years of research, we still don't understand how the brain works. Parts of the body, we have no idea how it works. And going into it, and whoever it may be, doctor, nurse, physician, whatever it is, how can you not go in and be amazed by the wonder of God and his creation? And even says, my favorite verse is Jeremiah 1:5, and it says, I knew you before you were born, and before you were born, I set you apart. There's also another verse that talks about him knitting us together. And when you're knitting or when you're sewing, I sew, so I know what it's like. But if you've ever seen your mom or your grandma, her like sitting there knitting and sewing, she'll sit there and sew it or knit it and then undo it because she messed up and then sit there and redo it again. If you sit there and think of it, God knitted us perfectly together. Individually, no one person is the exact same. Even twins, they're not the exact same. So it's, for me, I see God in the midst of it. God like is there, even in the hardest days, even in days I'm just, oh, I don't want to do this, I don't want to get up at 5 a.m I don't want to have to deal with difficult patients, I don't want to have to deal with grumpy people, God still reminds me I'm still here.
Yeah, beautifully said. I was going to say, to like add on to that, I think, especially within biology, I think anyone who studies biology at a collegiate level and does not see the God working or like or his existence or any of those things, I think, to be honest, miss out on a huge for aspect sure. of the field.
Yeah.
And I think it even goes beyond healthcare. Like you say a lot of people put God, church, whatever, and then healthcare. I would extend that to saying people go God, church, service, like all the, you know, Christian things, and then career as a whole. And I think within every single career, there's a way to see God working in it and working through it. 100%. Obviously, I think with medicine, it's just so magnified. It's so intense.
It is.
Every single day, every single patient, every single lecture, every single whatever it is, there's an there's a very visible aspect of God's existence within it. So I kind of wanted to ask you, like, how do you have these conversations with fellow peers within the healthcare industry that necessarily are not Christian? What kind of things do you talk to them about concerning Christianity within healthcare, if you do that at all?
So a lot of the times you can't just bombard them with Jesus, God, and you're doing wrong and you're living your life incorrectly and this and that, you know. I think in a sense, a small part of them feels guilty. And if they don't, then you got to meet them where they're at, you know. Like a lot of the times the patients I see, sometimes I have to go in and be a sitter. So what that means is like you're basically sitting there for 12 hours watching a patient because they may be on suicide watch or they may be a harm to themselves or to others. They may need just someone to keep an eye on them because they're at risk for falling or injuring themselves if they get up. So when you sit there, sometimes you'll have conversations with them, and the stories you hear is like, I remember I had this one patient. I was sitting, he was homeless, and he was saying how he lost everything in a fire. He's, I think, from a different state. He lost his wife, he lost his kids, he lost everything in the fire. And he was also a drug addict, and he became homeless. And he said, in the midst of all that, I still believe in God. I was like, I have no idea how you're here and still believing in God, you know? So sometimes meeting them where they're at, sometimes they're angry with God. Sometimes they're disappointed in themselves. Sometimes they think God is upset with them because of the life that they're living. So going into it, when you're talking to someone, a patient, for instance, they may not be a really big believer. They were a part of the church for so long, and they left the church because of X, Y, and Z. You have to go into it very gently, because that you also want to mimic Christ in a sense. Whenever he met the sinful woman or the woman at the well or anyone, he met them where they were at. He never bombarded them. What you're doing is wrong. Like Saint Fatini, the woman at the well, he didn't go and tell her, you're doing this and this X, Y, and Z, and you're wrong, you're going to hell. No, he met her where she was at, and he told her, and he had a conversation with her, you know, and from then on, that changed her life. So in that sense, we have to approach it in the sense of approaching it how Christ approached it, because he approached Gentiles, non-believers, everybody. So we have to, in a sense, mimic Christ and how he went about it in a gentle sense, in a loving way, because we want to preach to them that Christianity and Christ is love. God is love. So with my actions, I show that. A lot of the times we hear people converted because there was a Christian and their behaviors showed God. So in that sense, you have to approach it in that way. And then also, you know, you have to have your own understanding of the faith, of what's true and what's wrong and what's right. You know, like you have to be able to differentiate what's correct and what's incorrect and where your morals are at. With this field especially, your morals can come into play a lot of the time. What is correct and what's not correct, especially with new developments and new research and new studies and all these things. So That's usually how I go about it. There are some people who sit there and just attack you straight on, and you just got to realize, okay, you're not trying to have a conversation, you're not trying to get anywhere, you just want to argue and just you're angry, you know, and you still have to meet them with kindness and gentleness as well. Because even you just doing that, that could change their complete outlook on Christianity in general. Yeah, that's my two cents.
Yeah, and there's a couple points I wanted to make about that. The first thing is that you said, like, you have to meet people where they are.
Yeah.
And I think, like, you use the Saint Fatini woman at the well, perfect example, where Christ, instead of being aggressive, instead of, you know, being, I mean, either way, like, he's correct. So, like, if he went and said, you did this, there's nothing wrong with what he said.
Yeah.
But it would be like, you know, obviously Christ is perfect, so we didn't do that. But it'd be like how you would say it.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times, especially within healthcare, with all the tough things that you deal with and the tough things you have to tell patients, the how is so important. And that leads into the fact that, like a lot of times, the like you said, like people will see a Christian based on their actions, and and that's what will change them. It says, like, it reminds me of, I was at San Farina last night, and Steve was giving a talk, and he said, he was talking about the third hour gospel, when it says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who's in heaven. So in that same way, I mean, that's true, right? We have to be the light of the world. We have to be that light set apart on a hill. And by that, people will see that and ask more, look more, look for God more. And the last thing I wanted to say, you should lead me right into my next question, which was, I mean, you're talking about morals, you're talking about morals, which my question was, are there any things between faith and healthcare that maybe you struggle with? There's some things that, like, healthcare will say, the healthcare industry will say, that really kind of goes against your morals, kind of goes against your faith. How do you deal with those things, and how do you kind of go about that?
So nowadays with new research and everything, especially with society about transgenderism and all of those things and the things you're doing with your body and the medicines and techniques and all of those things, for sure abortion is a huge thing. Things that people don't even realize when it comes to, for instance, a certain vaccine, people don't know that they practice it on aborted babies. They test it on aborted babies. So a lot of the times with healthcare medications or vaccines or whatever it may, and I'm not against vaccines whatsoever. No, you should get vaccinated for sure. Like, I don't want to be walking around and someone give me like something that should have been gone a long time ago, you know? Things like that, a lot of the times you have to do your research. You can't just go based off of what people tell you, because words and things get mixed up all the time. But what I realize is that you have to do your research on what this practice or whatever this is. Like, how did this come to be? Or how, you know, especially nowadays. That for sure. For instance, like recently, someone I know had was like the couple was pregnant and this just happens sometimes where the baby has a specific gene that they're born malformed, or they're born with a specific disorder that's not going to have them live more than a year or two or whatever it may be. There are some cases where a baby is born without a brain, things like that. The parents of course have final say, but of course what does the church father say? And I remember in school they have us take a Bible class for nursing majors, and a part of it was ethics. So we were presented, each group was presented a case according to whatever field they were interested in going into. For my case, I was at the time more interested in going into neonatal, labor and delivery, babies, like that whole field. So the case that was presented to us, and the cases are all real cases, these are true cases that have happened in real life. The case presented to us where I believe the mom was pregnant and she was trying to have an abortion, or she was in the process of having an abortion. Oh, I remember. She had tried to abort her baby, but it didn't fully happen.
Sorry, what do you mean by didn't fully happen?
So when we say this, it means when they tried to do the abortion, sometimes they'll give you a pill if it's early on, and the pill could kill the baby instantly. The abortion was unsuccessful, so the baby didn't die.
Okay. Yeah. You said not fully. I was like partially. Like,
yeah. Sorry, that didn't make sense. So she came in and she was having the baby prematurely. So what do you do as a nurse? She still wants to have an abortion. She still wants to kill the baby. And in certain states, I think in New York or something like that, you can still have an abortion up until the baby is, like, basically being born. The child is about to come out into the world, and you could kill it right then and there. So in situations like this, we had to dive deep. Okay, what do we do? What about the father? What is he has a say in this. But the father, the case that was given to us, said that the father didn't know that she was even pregnant. She didn't want to have kids, but the dad does. In this case, what are you supposed to do? Because you're, as the physician or as the nurse or whatever it is, your main care is for that patient, for the mom, not for the dad. Of course, you have to put into aspect the parents and the family, but at the end of the day, you're caring for that patient. So as the nurse, what are you supposed to do? Me personally, I don't believe in abortion. I don't support that. So my entire group, we all agreed that we don't support this whatsoever. We don't support the abortion. But the baby is still alive, is still breathing, and she wants to kill the baby, even though it's alive and it's here. What are you supposed to do? Because in certain states, if you keep caring for this baby and she decides, no, don't give him any extra care, let him die, if you go against that, you could be sued. So what are you supposed to do? And these are real, true cases. I know one of my other friends had a case where a Jehovah's Witness. Jehovah's Witness is not allowed to have blood transfusions. So if you get in a car accident and you're bleeding out a lot, they're going to give you blood. But for Jehovah's Witness, they don't believe that it's against their law or whatever, or their belief, for them to accept blood from someone else. They think that if we just pray, God will care for it. Mm. What are you supposed to do in that point? The child is dying, but they have say over that child. You're put in these situations, and those are like extreme cases, but they happen sometimes. So in those cases, you need to evaluate, what are your morals? What does the church say? I went back to the church fathers, and I saw there were quotes from church fathers from the first few centuries talking about abortion. It's not right. It's not okay. Abortions were happening back then. Like, it's not anything new. It's just we're more open about it now. So you need to evaluate that. And then also, you can't judge the patient, which is really hard to do, because you're killing a life. How could you not care for this child? Mm. The child is here. You can see it. And she completely disregards it. You can't judge them. It's not your place to judge. Who are you to judge? You are here to care for them. That's all you can do. And it's really hard not to, because of course there's a righteous anger in you. There's just like, it's not right. That's not okay. It's a life. It's a life that God intended to be here. Like, he was here. God obviously wants him to be here, you know? Mm. So, and you can't preach at them.
Yeah, you can't.
You can't. For sure. Like, she may be a different religion. She may not even believe in it. She may be atheist or whatever it may be, you know? So in those cases, you have to really dig deep. And we, as the group, came to the conclusion that as the nurse, if that was the case, we would be asked to be taken off that case. And you're allowed to do that because of your religious beliefs. You are allowed to. Thank God we are in a country that allows free religion, to whatever religion, and you know, if you don't believe in something or it goes against your belief, then that's okay, you know. So in that case, we removed ourselves from the situation. We'd still pray for them, we'd still do everything that we can, but at the end of the day, after being removed from that case, we'd still provide care and love to the mother. You have no idea what's going on with her. There might have been something that caused her to not want a child. Her parents abused her. Someone hurt her. She might have been, you don't know. You have no idea what's going on in their mind. But you don't just completely disregard the person just because of the wrong judgment, you know? Like, Christ didn't do that. He didn't disregard a sinner because he sinned. No, he still loved them, you know? So even after, we would still check up on her, see how she's doing, and still give her as much love and support in, as you could, you know? So, yeah.
I think, to be honest, I have no clue what I would do in those situations. Either one of those. Mm. It took me back a little bit. It took me off guard a little bit. But I think, obviously, like, getting taken off the case is probably the best scenario because, yeah. I mean, there's nothing you can really do about it. You can't force someone to make a decision. You can't force someone to do something. Yeah. And I don't really know, because I feel like a lot of times people come to these points in life where they make these decisions under such distress and under such emotional trauma that I don't think they would make the same decision under a purely logical mind.
And sometimes you won't know how you're going to handle it until you're in the situation.
Of course. So. Of course. I mean, there's no way to prepare for something like that. Exactly, yeah. It's literally impossible. And then I also think you made a point about not judging the patient, which I think is so, so, so important as a Christian, not just patients, but in general, not judging others, but because a lot of time, especially in the world we live in, where, especially with our generation, about how strong we are in our faith and how we talk about, I feel like our generation is very, when it comes to social issues, is very, proclaims it. Wow, I can speak English. Like, it's very loud about it. It's very, likes to say a lot about it. But then it's always like, you can't judge the people because you're not in that situation, and you never know what you would do if you were in it.
Yeah.
And I think it's like a very, very good reminder, especially for someone like me who talks a lot, that it's like, it's a good reminder to realize that there's nothing you can do to prepare for it. I even feel like, even as a healthcare professional, there's nothing you can do to prepare for the moment of having to tell that patient, it's in your hands. You have, you can make this decision, you can make that decision.
Yeah.
Because life is not binary. So to minimize something to a binary decision for someone, something of so much importance and so mm-hmm. much value, that you're really dealing with people's lives.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's terrifying. I can never do it. That's honestly, I can never do it.
Sometimes all you can do is just, you don't know what to do. So who do I go to? Like, I'm going to go to God. I'm going to pray about it. God, give me the wisdom. Give me the tools. Give me something. Let your Holy Spirit work in me because I don't know what to do. Like, no person is ever going to be able to, like, give you the perfect advice, you know? Mm. And sometimes you go in there. Like, there are times where in certain situations, I have no idea how I answered the way I answered. And it helped the person. Even though I felt like I didn't do it. It was God. God who's... In this, I always ask God, God, work through me. It's not by my skill. Even when I go to do working in the hospital, I go and draw blood for labs. So even before going in to draw labs, I always do the sign of the cross. Because it's not my skill. It's God who gave me the skills to be able to... Because there are nurses who, like, sit there and poke at you the whole time and they bruise you. Like, so many stories of, like, this nurse did not do a good job and now I'm bruised and she blew my vein and all of these things. And it's like by God's grace, I can do it without hurting the patient, you know? So it's God who's giving you the wisdom and the ability and the strength to, you know, handle that situation. And he's not going to put you in that situation unless he thinks you are... equipped and right for this situation, you know? So it comes down to him.
Yeah, I think the point, like, you made a lot of very good points there. And I think the first one being about the gifts and about the things that God gives you, you know, whether it's healthcare, whether it's whatever. Like, at the end of the day, all we can ask for, and this is like my prayer every day for this podcast and in general in my life, is that it can be a vessel for God's grace.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Because that's all you can ask for. At the end of the day, every single skill you have, everything in your life goes back to the thankfulness point earlier, comes from God.
Yeah.
And the most edifying, the most fulfilling way of being thankful is by giving that, sacrificing everything you have back to God.
Yeah.
I know in the liturgy, I think it's the Gregorian liturgy, it says, maybe it's the basil, say, the liturgy of St. Basil, but it says we give you of what is yours. Sorry, yes. That's the wording exactly.
Yeah.
We give you of what is yours. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, that is so true.
Yeah.
Everything we give God is not, it's not us, it's his. Yeah. We're just giving it back, you know? It's like when Christmas time, you're getting gifts for your parents.
Yeah.
When you're like a kid and your dad gives you money to buy a gift for your mom and your mom gives you money to buy a gift for your dad. You did not make that money. Like, you are not making that money.
That's for sure.
Like, but your parents give you the money to get a gift, and then you give it back to them.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So it's about like it's a. But at the end of the day, it's up to the kid to use that money in a positive way to give it back.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the same way. Like, God gave us the gifts, and it's up to us whether to give it back and pay it forward, or to keep it for ourselves and, you know, put the talent in the ground.
For sure. But you don't get to that point very easily. Like, you don't get to this point just like, yeah, just واحد, like, just كده يعني في يوم وليلة and you're going to be like a complete mindset, maybe for some people, but it's a constant work within yourself and evaluating your sins constantly and every day. And يعني it's really more with your own spiritual life. The more work you do with yourself and with God, the more God will reveal these things to you.
Of course.
You know?
Of course.
So it's hard for one who, for instance, has like anger issues or something like that to be patient or to be thankful when you can't see past the rage. You know, you're blinded. But when you've worked on that and worked with, and God has worked with you, then he starts revealing these things like, who on earth am I, dude? Mm. Like I am nothing. I'm a speck of dirt. But you see something in me, you know? Like, one time I was asking my father of confession, like, when I'm going to prepare to take communion, what do? Like, I don't feel worthy enough to go and even just sitting in the heikel or taking, like, the body, just even attending the liturgy, being in God's presence, I don't feel worthy at all. What do I do to, like, make even just an ounce of myself a little better to present myself to God. He said, you can't make yourself worthy. It's impossible. God is who makes you worthy, you know, who makes you good and makes you worthy to come and partake of the communion.
And I think that's beautifully said by the introduction of the fraction.
Yeah.
When it says, let us give thanks to God, for he has made us worthy to lift our hands and serve him. I'm watching that completely. But that's basically what it says.
Yeah.
And then it says, and let us also ask him to make us worthy to partake of the communion.
Yes.
And so I think that's the same, you know, like you said, at the end of the day, it has nothing to do with me, and everything to do with God. And I think that if you have that mindset in healthcare, engineering, whatever you end up doing in life, that is the most fulfilling, most satisfying way to live your life.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to move the conversation a little bit more, and I wanted to ask, because we're on the topic of God, how do you, what aspects of your faith do you use to deal with the coping mechanisms within the healthcare industry? Because obviously, like we just talked about, there's some very tough things within healthcare. So what are some things that you take from the faith?
So actually, the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, going into this field, you're bound to deal with death. You're bound to deal with grieving or seeing difficult things. So sometimes I would wonder, how am I going to be able to deal with these situations? I don't feel like I'm equipped. How am I going to react in the situation? You can never really know until you're put in that spot. But for instance, with grieving or dealing with death, I look at death a little differently. So when my father passed away, I was seven. So my mom, and I thank God that she introduced death to us, me and my brothers, in this way, because it changed. I never thought about it until now. It changed my aspect and my approach to death. When it came time, my parents, my dad at the end, the last 2 months, he was in California doing treatment, and he passed away in California. So we were away from them for a while. They came back. We didn't know that he had passed away. So my mom was there, and came time, Mama, where's Bubba? And she just looked at me and smiled. He's in a better place. So as a seven-year-old, I had no idea what that meant. And I was like, what does that mean? And she said, he's in a better place. I was like, oh, he's in heaven now, you know? So especially seeing someone very close to you, or someone in general, suffer for so long, of course it's sad, but you're like, مرتاح. You know, like you feel okay, you're at peace with it. Of course, there are moments where I still miss him, and there are sad moments. And like, of course, I was sad, you know, my dad was my best friend. But in that moment, I didn't realize that when she said it that way, it was a complete 180, like, because in our culture, death is this horrible thing. We wear black for 40 days, sometimes for the rest of our lives, and we cry and we scream and we like, it's hard to see, you know? So when it came time for the funeral, my mom told Amba Yusuf, I don't want to see anyone make a sound. I have 3 children here. I don't want them to see death this way. And she looked more of how she took it and framed it the way the Bible framed it. It's like that through Christ, even though they're dead, they're still alive through Christ, you know? So seeing it in that regard changed my view of death. And it's just not this horrible thing to me. I can approach death. Sometimes it doesn't faze me, which is a little concerning, but in a good way, Yani. So the way she shaped us, Yani, like I would, during the funeral, I remember turning around and I see people around like, why are you guys crying? Like, yeah, like he's in heaven. He's okay now. Like we saw him suffer for so long. He's in a better place. I know as a child what heaven looks like because of what you're taught. What does heaven look like? There's no pain, there's no suffering, there's no illness. You're happy, you're praying, you're with God. What's better than that? Why would I want him to be here in suffering? then be up there, you know? So from then on, that's how I looked at death. Whenever someone I knew or a family member, you know, like, of course I'm still sad, and that's a human emotion and everything, and everyone grieves in their own different way. But for me, I look at it, they're in a better place. In some regard, they suffered. There's no peace here on earth, you know, unless like it's the peace that God gives you. But there's pain, there's suffering, especially when they're older or they've lived their life. Like someone I know, she had cancer and she got it for the second time. It was horrible. Like seeing her and suffering for so long, just seeing her be in heaven is, or in paradise is gives me more reassurance and peace than grieving them, you know? Like, of course, still go through the grieving process and like cry and do all of those things, but my first thing that comes to mind is they're in a better place, you know? So, yeah.
I really have nothing to say to that. That was very well said. There's nothing for me to say to that, to be honest with you. But I will move the conversation on.
Good, yeah.
But you did touch on, you said that earlier, you're talking about how God does not give you anything that you cannot handle.
Yeah.
So ask you if you have any stories where your faith has served as a source of strength within the healthcare industry.
Actually, just recently, I was during nursing school, you do both clinical rotation and you're doing didactics, which means you're doing like 3 to 4 hours of class and lab and skill practice and all those things, and you're going to the hospital and doing clinical skills. So you're doing your rotations and your classes at the same time. So just recently, I was given the opportunity to observe open heart surgery. Let me tell you, it was so cool. Like,
I would throw up.
My brother is the same way. Like, talk about blood or any like bodily fluids.
I'm gonna see the thing that pumps blood.
It's remarkable. It's so cool. Hey, it's each their own. So, you know, like there's smells, of course, and like all those things, and it's very interesting. But honestly, going in there, like seeing the heart pump in real life, you're just amazed. Like you're just like, oh my gosh, God, like, whoa.
I'd be amazed sick to my stomach, but yeah.
Yeah. To me, I'm just like, whoa. Like they had a screen that had a, like the lights have a camera in them. So from up top, you can see what the surgeon is doing. I'm sorry, I'm trying not to like, but like I can see, you can watch what they're doing.
Because today, I was with the, and he was telling me about how he has to go back to the lab to like study a literal heart
for
his anatomy class. And he just showed me a video of it. And so that's just like in my head.
Technically, they're not supposed to take videos of it, but.
Oh, sorry, never mind.
Don't put that in
there. That did not happen.
What was I saying? Yeah, like in.
This is disgusting.
In lab, like in anatomy, we practice on cadavers, which are bodies that are donated to science, to students who can practice on them, because the diagrams that they have that are the models that they have, like, yeah, they're helpful, but seeing it in real life is completely different.
Yeah, of course. I'm not arguing with it. I just think like that image is now in my head when you're talking about from up above.
Yeah. So just looking at the screen and watching it, like, you know, little kid when they're watching a cartoon and they're just like eyes are glued to the screen and like mouth is open wide.
That was not me. How I would describe open heart surgery, but okay.
To each their own, yeah. But me personally, I thought it was the coolest thing ever.
Of course.
You know? So, and the surgeon, I'm about to just warning here, about to get into some details. The surgeon, in order to he was replacing, in the heart you have valves that open and close in order for blood to go through. Mm-hmm. For this patient, her valve was not working properly, okay? So it was closed, so blood couldn't go through properly. So he had to replace the whole valve. In order to do that, you obviously cannot work on a pumping heart, stitching a new valve to it, so they have to stop the heart. So in order to do that, you have to go on a bypass machine. And this machine pumps blood through your body for you outside. So it takes the body, the blood that's in you, and they have blood and they circulate it, they add, and they're monitoring, like looking at the oxygen that's in it, making sure like the
technology is crazy.
It is. It's wild. it was so cool. And
that's cool.
That's cool. Yeah. But you have to stop the heart. So he has to put these huge like tubes.
Yeah, like he literally physically into the heart. Stops the heart.
Yeah, and stops it. And he's doing it, and I was allowed to go at the head of the table and look from the inside. So cool. Okay. So I was just amazed the whole time, you know, like just whoa, God, you are something else. Like it is a completely different thing talking about the heart, studying the heart. Studying a cadaver is different from looking at a real life beating heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's a completely different thing, you know. So leaving that, I was like, whoa. Took 4 hours, but I was like, best 4 hours of my life. like that was so cool. Leaving that, going back to the floor that we're working on. Before we went on break. before we went on break, a patient had just passed away, and my instructor was like, I want you guys to go and perform post-mortem care, so that when you guys go and become nurses, this isn't your first time, like it's not your first time doing it by yourselves. So you know, she said, if you don't want to, that's totally fine. I decided to go. The patient had passed away, like they were just older, and they were there for palliative care, which means, you know, you're just giving them medications and trying to make the process a little easier for them. So the patient had passed away.
Of like natural, like old death.
Yeah, yeah, she was old. So going into it, like, you're just like whenever we would go into lab and see the cadaver, I couldn't look at the face. I don't know what it was. It would creep me out. So I was like a little worried that I would like freak out or like be disrespectful in any sense. And going in, it looked like she was sleeping. She just looked like she was sleeping, you know? And the nurses were telling us, you know, we like to talk to the patients and tell them, like, for post-mortem care, that means that you're cleaning up the body and you're wiping them down and washing them and putting them in the body bag, and then either sending them down to the morgue or waiting for the funeral home to come pick them up. So we're in there and we're cleaning up the patient, and the nurse is sitting there talking, all right, Mrs. Whatever, I'm gonna wipe your legs, I'm gonna wipe your arms, I'm gonna lift your arms, just to give them respect to the person who was just here. Me personally, I preferred not to do that. I preferred to pray while I was doing that. And the whole time, if like whenever they would all turn around or do something else, I would try to do the sign of the cross on her or on myself and pray just the whole time. You know, it's an image to see, which is why, like, again, going back to how my mom like introduced death to us, it wasn't a terrifying thing for me. Because I was telling my friends afterwards, the next day, that, oh yeah, I just performed post-mortem care for the first time. They were like, they put their food away. And they're like, Sophia, how are you not traumatized right now? I was like, I don't know, man. Just it's another day for me, to be honest. So it's in that moment, God taught me the value of life and death in that one day, in the span of 5 hours. One moment I was watching a surgeon work on open heart surgery and keeping this woman alive and sending her off to the ICU to get better. Another moment, a patient has just passed away and you're caring for them. You're still caring for them. Like, the family wasn't there at the time, but it teaches you. Like God taught me the value of life and death in that day. And ever since, it's just, Annie, these experiences, I'm thankful for it. It's not traumatizing to me. That's why I was like, you know, God puts you, like, certain people can handle it better than others. But for me, I took it as a lesson, and I saw God in it and how he cares for us from the moment where we're born to the moment where in surgery to the moment we're dying. He's there. You know, I still felt him be there. Oddly enough, I don't know if the woman was Christian or not, but that's how I like thought about it and saw it, you know. So yeah. Sorry to scare you.
It's always a good thing when you're a podcast host and you don't know what to say.
Yeah, usually with these things, like some people will be like, do you go to talk to anyone? Do you like vent to anyone? Weird, but I go talk to Mba Yusuf about this because he was a doctor before he became a monk. So, and he also sees death a lot, you know, and he attends funerals, of course. So I talk to him about this because, you know, talking to someone who is, whose fruit, you can see the fruits of their spiritual life and see that God dwells in their heart and their life is with God, you know, it's better to go talk to someone who can handle that, first of all, and who also can incorporate God into it and remind you of it, you know. I'd rather go talk to him than talk to someone else who just, oh, I'm sorry, or is this not scary for you, you know, like, I'd rather see the blessing and the lesson in it than be terrified or be, you know, disgusted by the spells. Of course, like, it was a little gross, but yeah, I chose that day to walk out and see the less, like, God's hand on our lives. Yeah.
I'm beautifully said. I mean, I don't think I can say to that. Like, yeah, I mean, I think that was a lot.
It is a lot, yeah. So I was like, fair warning.
Yeah, the warning was definitely received. But I will say, like you touched on a couple of things about death specifically, and I think because recently there was a funeral at church back home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Atlanta is a lot smaller, so when someone dies, like, it's, you know, everyone's there. Like, it's a little bit.
Yeah, I've been to an Atlanta funeral.
Yeah, it's a little bit closer. It's a little bit, you know. So, like, you realize in those moments that about how, like you said, like, how valuable life really is. Mm-hmm. You know, it goes back to the thankfulness, goes back to all these things that we keep saying, where, like, every single minute you have on this earth is an opportunity for you to glorify God.
It is.
And I think that is, however this podcast is taken, I think that's, like, the main message.
Yeah.
So speaking of the main message of this podcast, based on your experiences, what is some advice that you would give to other Coptic youth who want to pursue medicine, since everyone and their moms and their brothers and their dogs are pursuing medicine that are Coptic? So,
for one, pray about it. Some people will go into it and then halfway realize it's not for me. So pray about it. Number one thing. Always go to God first. Before anyone. Go to God. And I remember a youth came up to me and he was saying to me, I'm pre-med right now, but I don't know if this is what God wants for me, if this is his will. How do I know that this is his will? And all I could tell him is pray and he'll answer you. He will show you, you know, like a lot of the times when you hear how Mba Yusuf became a monk, or how anyone became a monk, or how anyone knew that the priesthood was for them, or whatever it may be, God reveals himself to you, you know. Don't ask for signs, like, okay, if I get an A on this, then that means I'm going into med school. That's not how that really works, you know. But you go in asking God, reveal your will for me. Is this the path you want for me? Is this where you will work in me? Is this what you want for me? Is this your will for me? You know, it is your decision. Do you want to go into this or not? But there's another aspect of it. Is it God's will as well? You know, and there's another part to it when you're praying about it. God, open my eyes and my ears to hear and see you speaking to me. Maybe it could be so clear to you but you just don't see it because you're blinded to it, or you just refuse to hear it because you're so dedicated. You're just so, no, أنا هكمل في ده يعني هكمل في ده, and that's, you know, that's on you. Another thing is seek counsel for sure. Do your research. Shadow, work in a hospital. If you're above 18, go work in a hospital. See what it's like. Can you handle this? Will you be able to do this for the rest of your life? Talk to people who are, if you're deciding to go into med school, talk to people who are in the process of studying for the MCAT in med school, people who are in residency, people who are doing a specialty. Talk to people in those different phases, not someone who's already there, you know, because the process changes every few years or so, you know, like for different schools, like for instance, for nursing school, we have to take an entrance exam. Depending on the school, they don't care what score you get, and some do care, you know. So it really depends on who you're talking to. Do your research. Another thing, check your morals, check yourself. Are you doing this for the right reasons, or are you just doing this for the money and for the title? A lot of people will go into it because they want to do it for their parents, or because their parents are nagging on them, or because they're like, ما تخشي دكتورة وميل ومش عارفة إيه, يعني, like, whatever, for the money and for the prestige of it all and all of this stuff. ماشي, okay, it's good to make your parents proud, but في الآخر, at the end of the day, you're the one who's studying. You're the one who's losing the hair. You're the one who's getting stressed. You're the one who's either gaining weight or losing weight because of the stress. You know?
That's funny.
So, like, it is you doing the studying, not your parents. Mm-hmm. And that's what my mom used to always tell me. And I thank God that my mom was not, like, so adamant about me becoming a doctor or me becoming an interior designer or whatever it was. She was like, it is your decision to choose.
Sorry, that's doctor, interior designer were like,
yeah, two completely
left
different
and
things.
Right,
yeah. It's your decision. You're the one who's studying, not me. You know? So, not your parents. Another thing is, look at your morals. Do you know the difference between right and wrong? What does your spiritual life look like? Because going into any healthcare field, it brings you down to your knees. Undergrad, maybe it's a little easier. Med school, completely different beast. Nursing school, completely different beast.
Residency,
completely different beast. You know, so at every stage, you gotta know, who are you gonna turn to? You're gonna turn to your parents, you're gonna turn to your friends, or you're gonna turn to a significant other if you're married at the time. You're gonna turn to your father confession. Are you going to turn to God? Just recently, school is getting really tough, you know? So going into it, I prepared as much as I could. Okay, it's going to be hard. Nursing school is going to be hard. You don't know how... Sorry. How hard it's going to be until you're in there.
Yeah.
So, like, just recently, like, the amount of times that I have been brought down to my knees and crying, I'm just like, God, if this is not what you want from me, just tell me now. I don't know what else to do. Like, it's hard. Even, like, just grades or the stress of it, or doing clinicals and doing didactics and having an exam every single week, it's hard, you know? It takes a toll on you mentally, physically, emotionally. And, of course, you have your family and your friends there for support. But, and usually, like, there would be times where I would go to my mom, my brother, my father confession, or whoever it may be, to comfort me. This time, I decided I don't want comfort from them. I went to God, like, right then and there, got on my knees. I was like, God, what do you want from me? I don't know what you want. Like, I'm tired. I'm trying. It's hard. Like, you see my efforts, and do you not hear me, you know? And even though, like, you're, sit there, talk with God, have that dialogue with him, yell at him, scream at him, talk to him as if I'm talking to you, or as if you're
yelling. Okay.
That's how you should look at
no,
it.
No, I meant like to yell at me, yell at, scream, yeah. Not talking to me. Yeah, okay.
Oh, I'm not going
to
yell and scream at you, get the mama, take a piss. You know?
Okay, Sophia, I see how it is.
That's
now.
Not what I meant. No. But
I was just messing with you.
It's okay. But, you know, like, talk to him as if he's your best friend. Mm-hmm. Depend on him for everything. Go to him first. He is going to be your backbone, and your support. He's going to give you the comfort. After I came out praying in that moment, I felt the most comfort I ever felt in my life. No amount of comfort that my mom, my brother, my father figure, my father confession, my friends, no amount of comfort or the things that they said could have helped me in that moment. Just being there with God and just sitting there crying, sitting there, just sitting there, gave me the amount of comfort that I needed, you know? So work on your spiritual life and make sure that when it comes to those hard moments, you go to God first. And there's always going to be stressful moments and hard moments in your life. So where are your priorities at? I remember going into my freshman year of college and asking my brother, what's your advice for me? And he said, give God his time and he will bless yours. Mm-hmm. So prioritize your services. Go to liturgy every Sunday, even if you have an exam the day before or the day after. I struggle with that sometimes because I'm working and I'm doing school and I have clinicals and I'm doing all of these things and service and all of these other things, and I'm tired. At one point in like my sophomore year, freshman year or something like that, when I was working, the only time I could work was on the weekends, and doing 12-hour shifts took it out of me, plus studying, plus doing clinicals. It was a lot on my body, so I couldn't get up in the morning to save my life, and I struggle waking up in the morning in general. So Abuna Bubbly, I remember him telling me, who are you going to serve? Which master will you serve? And it just, like, I don't know why, I never thought of it as, like, the story in the Bible. It's like, which master will you serve? One, you will love, like, one servant will love one master more than the other, you know? So if you give God his time, go to your liturgy, attend your services, you know, maybe youth meeting, it's not really necessary, but servants meeting, where are you going to get edified? Where are you going to get filled? Where's your cup going to get filled? Because if you're a Sunday school teacher, how are you going to fill the cups of your children and you not be filled? Are you reading your Bible? Are you praying every day? Being consistent, even if it's hard to, and you're like falling asleep, just one chapter in the Bible, minimum, you know? So that is the biggest thing. Another thing was,
before you get to that, I just want to say, like, the giving God your, like, if you give God your time, he'll bless it, I think,
yes,
is the most powerful saying, and it's the most true thing ever.
It is.
I've seen that in my life. I cannot count the number of times, yeah, where Tazbaha liturgy, no matter what I have the next day, we have Thursday Tazbahas at, mm-hmm, in Atlanta, mm-hmm, and I go to Friday morning liturgy. No matter what I have, you go.
Yeah.
You do it. Yeah. You made a commitment. You said that this is a service I'm going to attend. You attend that service.
Yes.
And it changes your life.
It does.
Because the 2 hours, 3 hours that you spend with God will bless the other 18 hours of your day.
For sure.
21 hours of your day. God. Bless the other 21 hours of your day.
I'm talking with you. Don't worry. Way more
than if you use the 3 hours to do whatever. Whatever, yeah, any, whatever else.
Yes.
You read the entire textbook in, yes, 3 hours. Does not matter. Those 3 hours you spend with God in liturgy, tazbaha, your personal whatever, mm-hmm, 10 times more important.
Yeah. And for me, it gives me energy.
Of course.
You know, like it rejuvenates me.
Exactly. You go in thinking you're going to, like, I wake up at 6 a.m. every day. Mm-hmm. It is the hardest thing to do is to wake up at 7 on Sunday.
Yes.
It makes no sense.
It is.
But your body, it's almost like, I don't want to say the devil's tricking you.
It is. It is the devil tricking you.
Like, it is.
Like, my father confession always reminds me, and I struggle with waking up in the morning, you know? Liturgy, waking up to say my prayers before going to school, whatever it may be. He always told me, the only way to have a successful spiritual life is losing sleep. It is your spirit and your body fighting against each other.
Yeah.
And is the devil putting thoughts into your mind, and it's you accepting those thoughts or not, you're saying, no, I'm getting up. You know,
exactly.
So it is the devil, because that's him, yeah, trying to make sure that you do not get anywhere, exactly, near God, you know. And sometimes even struggling in school, what I've come to realize is, like, anything, like, it reminds me of Job in the Bible, where he was like, the devil was going up to God and saying, I bet he doesn't love you. And he was like, okay, you can do whatever, to but leave his soul alone. And he killed his children. his riches. Everything. He lost everything. He lost everything. Even his wife is telling, curse God and die. Like, added to Stimmel. Wow, thank you so much. And his friends were no help either. Still, he held faith and like held on to God for dear life, you know? And I remember Abu Elisha actually told me this. He said, God sees your faithfulness and he'll reward you for it. You know, he sees it. And
like God, the reward doesn't have to happen now. It doesn't have to happen on the next exam.
Yes, for sure.
It'll happen when
we
it happens.
We think it'll happen now. But it doesn't. That's not how that it's on God's timing.
Exactly.
You know? So
and if it doesn't happen in this life, it'll happen in the life to come.
Exactly. So seeing that, like, sometimes struggling in school or whatever struggles it may be brings you closer to God. So that's my biggest, like, thing going into any healthcare. Another thing is bring God everywhere you go. Before I go into work, I usually go early and I sit in my car and I pray, God, give me the wisdom, give me the patience to deal with these patients. let me feel thankful, and be with me, keep me safe. Those I always pray. And in some, like, if I'm just having a bad day, I'm tired, I don't want to be there, I don't like my job today, whatever it may be, I have stuff going on at home, or I have stuff in my mind, or whatever it may be, in the simplest way, through a patient saying something, like, he reminds me, hey, I'm here, you know? So don't, like what you were saying earlier, keeping God, church, religion, faith, all these things over here, and work, career, school, whatever it may be, no. Take God everywhere you go. Take God when you're about to go into a patient's room, when you're about to perform a procedure. I know there are some surgeons, before they go, like while they're in the procedure, they'll stand in the corner and pray over the patient before they go in. Whatever. Pray the whole time. Recite the Psalms while you're walking down the halls of the hospital, whatever it may be. Take God everywhere you go. I can tell you the difference I saw from praying in the morning or keeping God on my mind or taking God with me to work versus not. Completely different. Like, it was horrible, horrible days. And a lot of the times I see nurses just hating their life because just the work is just, you know, like that. They've taken the field, doctors, whatever it is, and made it their identity. For me, my identity is God. He gives me my identity. My identity is with my church. This is where I thrive and find myself. Another thing is...
It's a lot of advice.
It is a lot of advice. Well, you gotta, like, I'm not trying to scare anyone to go into the healthcare field, but know what you're getting into.
Of course.
You know?
Of course. I think that goes with any field.
Yes.
Specifically healthcare, just because it's the commitment of time to get
for sure
anywhere in it is
for
so
sure
great.
Yes.
And if you don't commit to it, those 4 years of undergrad look very unsatisfying.
Yeah.
Without anything to add to it.
Another thing was sit with your father at confession and look at your morals. Have him check you.
Yeah.
Where are you at, like, with things, money, wealth, whatever it may be, pride especially. Sit with him and tell him, I want to go into this, but I want to make sure I'm going into it for the right reasons. And sometimes having someone who is older than you,
like a mentor.
Mentor, yeah. To be with you and to, like, go with you through the process and have, like, remind you, hey, God's still here.
Yeah.
Sometimes we will forget God, or just it's hard to see him in the difficult times. Support system for sure. You know, have your friends and like my shout out to Monica and Miriam. Like, I'm always texting them, pray for me. Like, this exam, it's getting really hard. Like, and my family as well. Support system. I think those biggest advice, yeah, I think.
That's perfect timing. It sounds like there's a circus going on outside. And so thank you, Sophie, for coming on to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It was great. Definitely going to have you on again at some point in the future. You can't say no.
Okay.
Thank you guys for watching. Make sure to like, comment, subscribe, turn on post notifications. See you guys next week. Thank you.